You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun. A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Very excited for you guys all joining us once again. Just reminding you real quick, 5 stars and a review on the iTunes podcast Apple Store. Just go ahead and do that. That would be very, very nice of you to do. Isn't that right, Vince?
Yeah, we love it. We love the reviews.
I do. I've read some really great ones recently. There was a couple of people, though, who were real mad that we weren't this other Sopranos podcast that exists and say that we don't take the show seriously enough. Well, you know what? I fucking defy you to find another Sopranos podcast out there, because it turns out there isn't one. We're the only one. So you're going to just have to suck it up and listen to our shit, bro.
Yeah. Sorry.
And
I mean, congratulations and you're welcome. But yeah.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's fucking free. What do you want from us? But also, please go and leave a review yelling at anyone who gives us a bad review. That would be very much appreciated, and we would love you forever for it. All right. Without further ado, today we're going to be talking about from season 5, episode 11, The Test Dream. And our guest today is a returning champion of Pod Yourself a Gun. You know him, you love him from the Chapo Trap House podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Felix Biederman is back.
Thank you for having me, Buzz.
Thanks so much for coming on again. How have you been? How's life?
You're the first guest that has requested his own episode so far. So
That's true. It's my favorite episode. It is.
This is your favorite one?
I'm the only guy who's like, this is my favorite episode, because I think it's like, okay, so I love the movie Tree of Life, because it's like, Tree of Life is the only movie I've seen where it like fully understands what a memory is like, where it's like, it's sort of out of focus and you don't remember the right things. Like it's, you're physically remembering something, but it's from a time before you had the words and concepts to understand the memory. So the wrong things are in focus. You're remembering like the wrong parts of it, but it's just like this weird thing that exists in your mind, and the entire movie's like that. And I love that. This one is the only thing where it's like they've got that, but with dreams. It's the only thing that actually feels like a dream. Where yeah. I mean, they take some liberties in how linear some of it is. But sure. Yeah, I mean, you have to do that for TV.
Right. Otherwise, it would just be like, you know, fucking people being naked, and then your old coach leaves you a cake, and then you just stare at the cake.
But it's kind of like that.
It is kind of like that
because it's like, yeah, Mikazian gives him the gun. And that there's all these disparate, weird scenes, but there's this constant thing of like, you're supposed to do that. Remember that you're supposed to do that, and he's like, yeah, I've got it taken care of.
Yeah,
and he doesn't do it, but I like it because the fact that it can take so many disparate scenes and characters and throw them in, like the genius of the show, like the directorial genius of the show, is that it's impossible until later to like fully hate Tony, because you're seeing everything through his eyes. It doesn't matter that you're not he's not literally the star of every scene, but you're experiencing everything how he kind of experiences it. Mm-hmm. So even when you're taken to another character, even when you're taken to Janice and Bobby, there's a part of you that's like, well, you know, he just got out of the hospital, and he's like he's trying to figure out where Vito is, and now you're bringing him this problem. Even if you're aware that he's an evil character,
right?
There's a part of you that's like going, that's like you feel, you sort of feel that experience of like going to like some shitty like white tablecloth restaurant with Valentina, right? Or like. Like just sitting in a room all day, in a dark room all day at a pork store.
You, things right. like that. You experience people with real problems as being pains in the ass, mostly, where you're just like, oh, why are they ruining my fucking day again?
When he says that thing about Bobby where it's like, well, it's always something with this guy, and you're kind of like, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But like, but this is, I fully felt as though the audience experiences the dream as him.
We
feel that feeling because we recognize, we have the same feeling where it's like, oh yeah, no, there's that like depressing cop and like
and Annette Bening.
Annette Bening, because it's like, yeah, he like saw a movie with her a week ago and it's right. like, oh yeah. Then there's like these things that I don't like to think about in my conscious mind, like Gloria Trillo.
Right.
Like things like that. And it's like you fully get this like unsettling feeling of what his mind is like.
I mean, that's like one of the things where I think like Vince and I are split on dream sequences in general, where I'm like, I feel like they're mostly good. I enjoy them. And I feel like this episode in particular, though, was the first time where I was actually like, I see where you're coming from, Vince. This is so far to date the longest dream sequence of The Sopranos.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like a good dream sequence, but the whole time, it's almost the whole time. Like the first few minutes, I'm into it, and then after that, I'm like, damn it, get back to the story, get back to what's really happening. Like what's actually happening right now? Like I'm definitely like in a rush for it to be over with. Maybe that's just because I also have short shitty dreams for the most part. Like my actual dreams are like me eating a sandwich and then I fucking wake up and then I'm like, well, that was
that's
stupid.
Not a shitty dream, Vince. That's actually pretty good.
Sure. As far as dreams go, yeah,
as far as dream goes, yeah, it's kind of nice. I mean, most of my stress dreams, like I related to the stress dream in this of like having something that you're supposed to do and you keep putting it off and then there's consequences because you haven't done it yet. I think where I was like really feeling like, all right, let's wrap this up, folks, was hearing Vin Mikasian sing two full verses of Three Times a Lady.
I love that. Like that. No, that's like, because like, if there's one, I had two words to sum up this show, it would be that's life. You know, you think you killed a guy in the forest, you're not sure. That's life. All these weird, untied up, loose ends. This guy that you like never think about. Mm-hmm. That would be, if you had a dream like that, it would be like, yeah, there would be this weird singing part. And I like that in its season arc, because that season's so good because it's so tense.
Yeah.
And like, but it has all these like low moment, like these low boil moments, like mm-hmm. Tony, Chris, and
Tony B
going to Uncle Pat's farm, and like nothing really happens, but it's this like low boil of like tension and bad feeling, and they're both like hiding, like running around Tony's like gut the entire time,
right?
And it's like with this, it's like, yeah, there's a part of you that's like, well, what the fuck, like they just like, what's Tony B gonna do? Mm-hmm. What's happening with New York? But it's like, it's also like, well, that's life. Like, the most important guy in this, like, just, like, had some woman give him a disgusting blowjob and, like, fell asleep. And is like, yeah, no, that's – that dream is great because it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, there are all these allusions in the show to Tony being, like – Tony thinking of himself as, like, a real-life general, right? Like, when Chris gets shot, he's like, we're generals. We're soldiers. We take orders. Yeah. or whenever he has a problem, he's like watching the History Channel. He's watching like some bullshit about like Rommel. And
right.
Like you can see him thinking like, that's like me. I'm
yeah,
like
that's
that.
Me. I'm Rommel.
Yeah. Yeah, but like he is like that because yeah. It's like we talked about it on our show.
I'm the Rommel of my father-in-law's backyard barbecue surprise party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, no one would come in with the sauce, with singing, with the sausages. But like
swinging them around.
But that's another, that entire episode, nothing fucking happens except for at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Two things at the very end. But the bulk of that episode is just like suburban bullshit. But it, again, yeah. It's like, yeah, that's life.
I
but,
love suburban bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but like, so, yeah, no, like, he is like a general because it's like, well, Eisenhower during World War II, he fell in love with this French girl and was like told Marshall, I'm going to run away with her. I hate my wife. And Marshall had to be like, can you like fucking get it together? Yeah. Like, what the yeah. fuck are you doing? And it's like, yeah, no, that's, it's like with Tony, it's like, what? Okay, so you're mad at your maid. You're going to sleep in New York. You're going to go to the Plaza, mm-hmm. which is so fucking stupid for so many reasons.
Right. Yeah.
And have this like stupid dream that's like half about your life and half about this movie you saw recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's – dude, that's life.
Yeah. That we needed Patton complaining about his cook like making him enchiladas all the time. Just like, again, with the she's always trying to make up for her bullshit with some enchiladas.
Always with the fucking enchiladas.
I love that when he like goes to Tony B's house and he's like, you wouldn't believe how annoying my maid is in my second house. Yeah. Yeah. And he like yells at Tony B for not listening to
yeah,
him.
He's too busy cleaning up after his children. And he's like, what yeah. the fuck's wrong with you? Yeah. He's just mad.
Get your head in the game. I'm complaining about my maid over here.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, it's yeah. such a good like Tony's an asshole episode for that reason. Like very subtly.
Yeah, well, we'll get into this episode on a deeper level very, very soon. But first, before we start, we must, of course, play the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today we are going to be talking about from season 5, episode 11 of The Sopranos, The Test Dream. Which premiered on May 16th, 2004. Vince, synopsis. What happens in this episode, according to IMDb?
Ooh, so much. Cousin Tony heads off to avenge the death of his good friend, while a dream reveals to Tony what he must do to prevent a full-scale war.
All right. And so, what was happening when this episode premiered, Vince?
That's right. Yeah, we're going all the way back to May 16th, 2004, just to give you the cultural context for this episode, without which we could not ever to evaluate it as art.
How could we?
How could
it's
we?
It's impossible.
You know, so we're right. We're like smack dab in like the armpit of the aughts. You know, some good stuff happened. Massachusetts has just certified the first same-sex marriage.
Are you going to play the bumper?
Oh, the bumper. Yeah, we got the bumper.
How long have we been doing this? Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember
then. Remember when it's the lowest form of conversation. Sorry about that. I was a little bit flustered because, you know, I just pulled like an actual Gloria in my kitchen 5 minutes before we started recording this where
you broke all your tomatoes.
I broke all my tomatoes. You know, the one good thing about it being really fucking hot is that you can grow tomatoes really well. So I got all these tomatoes.
Nice.
Had them in a little casserole dish baking because I was going to make some sauce later.
And then you set yourself on fire.
I did not set myself on fire, but it was very close. I pulled them out and I tried to put them on the counter, but then, you know, you got the oven mitt gets a little slippery on the edge of the casserole dish, and it just went all over the counter, all over the all over the kitchen floor. And we got that Pebble Tech in the kitchen. Which,
what the fuck is, what's that? Well, no, I don't know what that is. What's
it,
a pebble
It looks
tech?
Like pebbles, and then somebody puts like a laminate over the top of it. So like when you spill something, like it basically just disappears. Like you can't fucking see it anymore, which is good for a lot of things. But it's not good when you break like a piece of glass or ceramic in the kitchen. It just kind of goes all in the little holes and underneath
the edges of the counter.
So yeah, then I gotta.
That's how you get calluses though.
That's right.
Walking on pebble glass.
You got to build up those foot calluses, dude.
Yeah.
That'll help you out.
Yeah, like
well,
the caveman.
That's
the
most Italian thing you've ever done, by the way. Just right before the show, I break my tomatoes.
Yeah, I was, like, it felt very Tony Soprano, too, because I yelled like in anger as after I did it.
You're just looking for a maid to yell at?
Yeah, there's like, no one to yell at except for me.
Where's a Guatemalan when I need one?
Oh, the fucking enchiladas to the moon.
So what happened?
May 16th, 2004. Massachusetts, first same-sex marriage. This is a nice little article from the New York Times. Pretty fucking grim. Headline, science fairs are turning from frogs to U.S. security.
Cool.
When Charles Greenberg began work on his science fair project last year, he spent hours imagining hackers and terrorists who were trying to obtain classified documents vital to national security. I was just
this was like a positive story back then. This yeah, is like, no, isn't this it good that this news. Kid is thinking about this?
Yeah. You can really tell that like all the most popular shit during this period was like 24 and like the Bourne Identity. Everything was about like you having to shake down some terrorists who were trying to kill your family. I was just looking to see how secret I could make something, said Mr. Greenberg, who created a computer program to encrypt top secret files using patterns from chaos theory. I had to think like my enemy. Thinking about
who's
enemy.
Who's your enemy? What the fuck? Like the other kids in band? Like what the fuck are you talking about?
The guy who made the volcano with baking soda and vinegar? Yeah, that's his right. enemy.
It's that and girls. Those are the main enemies of that age group.
Thinking about enemies, particularly terrorists, is a growing theme in high school science fair projects, judges and science fair administrators say.
Sure.
Since September 11th and the military actions in Iraq and Afghanistan, students are veering from studying tree frogs and volcanoes in hopes of working on more immediate concerns of domestic security.
I love it. I love that we've just kind of decided just to call all the kids together and be like, all right, guys, we're changing the curriculum to be 100% national security based. We're going to figure out how to fight Al-Qaeda with fucking,
with STEM.
You know, with STEM. That's right. Yeah. Nothing beats terrorists faster than women in STEM.
Mr. Greenberg.
It's so funny because it's like the idea here is that like the U.S. government wasn't using encryption.
Right.
And it's like, oh, I invented this thing. And it's like, no, they've been using that literally since like before World War One.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Mr. Well, Greenberg is a senior at Suncoast High School in Riviera Beach, Florida, and his mother, Jane Rosen, is an employee of the Department of Homeland Security who trains screeners at Palm Beach International Airport. He was one of six students to win a $20,000 college scholarship on Friday night at the Intel International Science and Engineering Fair in Portland, Oregon, from the Department of Homeland Security.
I'm sure he grew up to be someone hella chill that we would all be friends with. You know?
Yeah.
This guy probably has so many fucking bodies by now.
Yeah.
he's trying to figure out how to find Snowden right now. And
yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly.
We also got a fun one. This one's from The Post, and it's Sopranos related. Mob gals and guys want Finn. Will Janowitz.
What?
Will Janowitz turns heads on The Sopranos. By his own admission, Will Janowitz can't keep a secret. But now he's on The Sopranos, playing aspiring dentist Finn DiTrollio, and secrecy on the set is tighter than Adriana's stretch pants. Ask him a plot question, and Janowitz says with practiced solemnity, "I can't answer that," followed by a loud guffaw. "That's the first time I've had to say that," he says.
And just pleading the fifth, dude. I like it. Yeah.
And it very likely...
Do you think there was like an insane Finn storyline that he like blabbed to someone and they're like, all right, throw that out.
Yeah.
They like wrote him out. There's like a storyline where he like kills Meadow by accident. Right. Yeah, it's like an Oscar Pistorius thing.
That's what they were...
That's what they had planned.
That's what they had planned, and they're like, ah, fuck it. We got to do the dream sequence.
Yeah. He told like a Baruch College senior about it. And they were like, ah, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And there goes that story.
Yeah, he was supposed to shoot Vito, yeah, and he accidentally shoots Meadow, and then he has to hide the body. That's, you know, that would have been a great storyline. I think, yeah, I would have preferred it.
Finn may have caught Vito's eye, but Janowitz didn't make much of a first impression at the show's casting office. While he was waiting to read with casting director Georgianne Walken, he overheard her assistants dissing him. "I heard them go, 'He's so not right. He's so EMS,'" Janowitz says. As in Eastern Mountain Sports, the outdoor clothing store.
Okay.
Well, that was then. Now, NBC wants a sit-down. The LA office of his New York agency is clamoring for him to fly out there. But Janowitz, a diehard Upper West Sider, the actor lives five blocks from his parents, James, an entertainment lawyer, and Catherine, a teacher and poet, has shied away from industry cattle calls like pilot season. He says, "I could do a series," but his lineup of projects, including an indie film called Ping Pong Summer, suggests a more independent spirit.
Oh, I want to watch Ping Pong Summer. That's like, I love like shitty, like mid-2000s indie movies.
Just doing mumblecore where they just like stand around talking about a
chair.
God
damn, that shit probably sucks. Yeah. I like need to find that.
By the way, Ping Pong Summer came out in 2014, which is a full 10 years after this article was written.
Holy shit. Why even release it at that point? Like, what?
They had to fix a lot in post. That fucking rules.
That's like, how does someone even remember it?
Like, you'd figure they'd lose a hard drive before they'd finish editing it in 10 years. That's great.
I don't see him in the cast either, so I think he might have.
Cut Finn!
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, that's fucking
he was
great.
Cut. It has Leah Thompson, Judah Friedlander, and I think those are the only recognizable. Oh, Susan Sarandon's in it, so that's good.
Is this might be a different movie? Like
true, yeah,
I mean, yeah. Like, because it's like there are. All right, there's this guy that me and my friends follow. I'm not going to say who he is because I'm against like intervention and all aspects.
Sure.
But he's like, he's a really funny guy. If you know who he is, you know. He like makes his own memes that he stars in, and they're actually like, they're pretty funny, but he's like a normal guy. And he watches, like, he just gets fucked up. Like, he smokes like an entire blunt to himself and then drinks like a ton of like Bacardi. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, best movie ever. And it's like some shit from a red box that's like, this didn't come out in our universe. This came out of like the GTA universe. Like it'll be a movie with like Olivia Munn and TJ Miller and like fucking Jonathan Rhys Meyers, and it's called like, you know, Company Retreat, and it's from 2018, and you're like, what the fuck? I feel like I would have heard about this. That other ping pong movie sounds like one of those, not an indie. This sounds like a movie that like a guy who like gets movies from Redbox.
Yeah.
Like this guy posted a screenshot of his phone, and there was something in the like Android alert thing that was like movieflix.com is harming your phone. And it's like, oh, that's where you're getting all those bullshit ass movies. It's from like movieflix.com. Like sub movie shit. Like what the fuck?
It just tells you the anniversaries of movies that no one saw. It's like, oh, it's 15th anniversary of Ping Pong Summer.
I think that's just like where those movies are. But I do think it's a different movie because this seems so much like those bullshit like Redbox movies, less like an indie movie.
I mean, just based on the cast alone and the fact that Finn is not in it, that does.
Yeah, exactly.
That raises some red flags. I'd say
it's
the
a
ship
shame because
out of a,
in 2005, Will Janowitz was starring in, he starred in David and Layla in 2005. And then in 2007, he was in Maddie Fresno and the Holoflux universe, playing East European lab assistant. So,
oh, fuck.
God damn, what a fall. What a tumble. This character didn't even have a fucking name. He was starring in Ping Pong Summer, and it, like, never came out. And then it's like you're back to being, like, an extra.
I do love the fact that this guy is too good for pilot season, and he's just like, no, I'm just going to kind of do my own thing.
Yeah, I'm just going to focus on my music right now.
Yeah.
That owns, because, like, yeah, no one really, like, the people who, like, got bigger from The Sopranos were already, like, really established, like,
right,
character actors. Like, all the main cast is, like, just the set. But no one really, like, there's not really, like, many people who were, like, big in The Sopranos. And then it's like, all right, your ticket to the A-list. Like, that didn't really happen.
Yeah. The closest is Edie Falco. Like, at least Edie Falco moved on to do another series.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, other than that, though... not really. It was just kind of
like Artie Bucco is, you know, going to be like at least a tertiary cast member in all the big movies coming out the next year. But
I mean, they all get jobs. They all get, you know, something.
Yeah,
they,
yeah, yeah.
You know, especially HBO recycles people all the time. But like no one really broke out. And to see that Finn definitely didn't, warms my heart, especially since he's a proud Upper West Sider. Might be the most annoying description of somebody. Like, I fucking hate you.
Yeah, it's like if you could bet on someone's career, it's like, okay, dad's an entertainment lawyer, gets like a pretty large like guest starring role in The Sopranos. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
I would like bet money on it, and it's like, yeah, that went nowhere.
Yeah,
that went fucking nowhere. That's cool. At least there's like, you know, there's some meritocracy in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
When someone does well, you're like, oh yeah, totally connected. But then you see a guy like this, dad, literally an entertainment lawyer. He's from the Upper West Side.
And mom
then,
is a poet. That's a job.
If your mom's a poet, you have, you're loaded.
You are so fucking loaded.
And it's like, it's not like he sucked. It's just like...
No, he was fine.
Yeah, he was fine.
He's my favorite. He's my favorite Meadow boyfriend. I mean, just in terms of like what happens with his character. I love watching them fight. And
those
then
scenes
get
are
engaged.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely the best actor of her boyfriends, I would say.
I thought Noah was pretty good.
Noah played like a fucking annoying prick really well.
Yeah, perfectly.
That was awesome. But it's like,
Noah is actually, that's Finn in real life, I think. Like, that kind of character. Like, that's who Finn actually is.
The guy who played Noah should have been in a lot more things is, like, an asshole. He was so good at that. Like, it sucked. Like, maybe he just didn't want to be an actor.
I think he's a music producer now.
Oh, okay. Well, good for, I mean, he was really good in that role, though. Like,
oh,
I would have liked to have seen him in more shit.
Yeah.
I mean, Meadow is, like... I feel like the Meadow performance, like the children's performances are like underrated in this show.
Totally.
Because, Bobby's kids are some of the best child actors.
Oh my
that
God.
I've seen.
Yeah.
They're really
perfect.
Good. Yeah.
And like people criticize Robert Eiler, but it's like, no, that's completely that guy's affect.
Yes.
Like that's totally what he would be like. And like Meadow's like this shit where it's like, she's like, oh, you want me to get a job? My ex-boyfriend was killed.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like so good, like that type of girl so well.
Asking her mom who's married to a mobster, have you ever had anyone close to you die?
Yeah.
It's like, what do you think?
And she had, I feel like she had like arguably a more complex job, which is like, she's Tony and like by extension kind of Livia. Because it's like, whenever like she can't do exactly what she wants, it's just like everything that's bad in the world and bad in her life. And it's like she had the difficult job of like sort of slotting that into like kind of like a character that's like just interchangeable with like any like Long Island Jap or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And
she has
doing it in a way where you don't immediately like you have to. On the surface, you're like if you're like one of the dumb people who watch this show, you're like, oh, Tony's daughter's a bitch, but she's awesome. But like if you go on a deeper level, you're like, no, she's Tony. Like,
we have to watch her learn like the denialism that makes this entire lifestyle tick, which is like you have to see – you have to see like a version of Tony and his sister and Carmela. You have to see like a version of them before they completely learn to like shut that part out of their brain. Like they, mm-hmm. you have to see like what their lives would be like before they had completely learned to be wholeheartedly in like this life where they don't care about certain things and they're in it for themselves. But like Meadow, at least we have to see her have, you know, like the brain of a normal person before she learns the kind of denial necessary to keep her moving forward.
Yeah. And I like that she's essentially just smart Janice. Like she's an educated Janice. She's got all the same kind of like hyper focused on like liberal talking points as a way of like, you know, trying to justify whatever the fuck is going on with her family, you know, murder
going to Europe
and
with her friend or whatever.
Right, exactly. It rules.
But cheers to Will Janowitz. He went on to star in single episodes of Inside Amy Schumer, Law and Order SVU, Broad City, The Heart She Holler, Deadbeat, American Experience, Netflix Presents The Characters, The Night Of, The Daily Show, Gotham, Chicago PD, and of course FBI Most Wanted.
That would be funny if like this is the year he like blows up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
finally
makes it.
Yeah, America's finally ready for him.
For the kid who played Finn.
Yeah. Well, now that he's like a 37-year-old man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the life where you get like one or two acting roles per year, where you're on set for like 4 days, and you know he probably makes like just enough to you know support a lifestyle and works like 3 days a year. Not too bad.
Oh, that's a great life. Like, that's awesome. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
You have to go to the gym as like part of your job.
Yeah.
I mean, but he's so thin. I mean, I don't know what he looks like now.
You know, but I feel like that's the actor's life where it's like doing that shit is like working.
Yeah.
Got to maintain.
Good for them. Yeah.
Anyway, the top movies in America were Troy, Van Helsing, Mean Girls, Man on Fire, and Breaking All the Rules.
Yeah.
Top pop song was Burn by Usher.
Mm.
This was the year that really just cemented Usher as part of the zeitgeist. Top rock song was Cold Hard Bitch by Jet, which one of my favorite radio songs of the aughts, I got to say. Not that there's much competition,
it's a good one.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, beautiful.
And that's that was the Remember When machine.
So that's what was happening in America. You know, people were in love with Finn DeTrullio, and they were guys and girls all loved him, and they all listened to Jet. It was a good time in America, and the Iraq War is going great.
They were listening to Jet and just hoping that Ping Pong Summer would come out soon.
waiting on edge for Ping Pong Summer to finally be released. Oh, my God. But let's get into this episode. Like you said, Vince, the synopsis is that your dog?
Yeah. I'm getting a delivery, so they're barking at the delivery guy.
Oh, fair.
Yep.
Like you said, cousin Tony heads off to avenge the death of his good friend while a dream reveals to Tony what he must do to prevent a full-scale war. Pretty good synopsis. I, of course, have a better one.
Oh, good.
Every week on this podcast, I have some Bada B stories for you, Will, where I fully explain what this episode is about. And this week is no different. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present to you the Bada B stories. Felix just walked out.
That's the right way to do that.
Tony's babe brings him a
Doo-doo bullets.
Yeah. Shout out to David Roth for helping Matt discover auto-tune.
shout out to... could you tell it was auto-tune? Because I was trying to do it just a little to...
yeah.
Anyways.
So you talked about blowjobs. So the beginning of this, the opening shot of this episode is Tony and Valentina having sex off camera. And then Tony comes into frame and like he spit, like you see him spit. There's a lot of, the opening shot is a lot of saliva. And I assume that was like him going down on her because she was...
I mean that's what I thought was going on, which you know, explains why he's, you know, not hungry, but also he's also putting his shirt back on. Like, basically what I got from the opening shot is that he wants to get in and out real quick, so I imagine he came. I would be very surprised if he just went down on her and left.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. true. Valentina set the whole Valentina setting herself on fire scene is so amazing, because that's just like, that's such an amazingly bizarre thing to write into a show. Like, that's so, like on paper that's like a Spanish telenovela plot line sort of thing. Mm-hmm. but it's like, it's delivered at such a level of being mundane that mm-hmm.
yeah.
It's beautiful. Like, she set herself on fire while she was making egg beaters and Tabasco.
You must be hungry.
You're not gonna cook, are you? Just saying, don't trouble yourself.
How about some egg beaters and Tabasco?
That's fine. Didn't I tell you I hate this shout between rooms shit?
So? You even gonna look at the brochure?
What is it, sneakers or something?
Sandals. It's the jewel of Antigua. Three sun-filled days on white sand.
I got AJ on weekends.
So we'll go on Monday. Get a great rate on an ocean view.
You can tell the writers are up to something here just by the way that she's basically parroting whatever brochure she's just read.
Yeah.
The air is the same temperature as your body, so you don't even need to wear clothes.
I gotta watch my skin in the sun.
You know you're getting a divorce, and I see you less than before.
I didn't say no.
I just want your undivided attention for once. Is it so much to fucking ask for a little bit of attention?
Like, their sound effects editing is just so consistently incredible.
Oh, just yeah. Her screaming while on fire for the longest time. Just it's I feel weird laughing about it. It's like the show is, you know, kind of turns you into a little bit of a sociopath. Like, you should be shocked and hope that she's put out. But someone in a silk like robe, completely naked, just fully engulfed in flames. That's very funny.
Well, it's like Felix was saying about the show putting you in the mindset of Tony. Like, when he, like, his reaction to that is basically like, all right, knock it off, you're okay, like, settle down. Like, his it's not really concern.
Yeah, and like, I love how like stupid the argument they're had, like, whoever like wrote all the arguments in this show did a great job, because it's like, you're so like, you get this specific feeling of like feeling sort of bad that you like don't give a shit, but also like not enough to like care,
yeah,
you know? Right. And it's like, oh, I feel like he does.
Yeah, like that whole scene is him like getting sex and then being like, okay, how many more minutes do I have to put in talking to this broad that I don't want to talk to?
When is it rude for me to leave? Because now she's going to start cooking and, you know, she's going to start trying to invite me to go to Sandals, which he calls sneakers, which is just another fantastic Tony Sopranoism. And then it's like, she is, I love her complaining, you know, you're getting a divorce and I see you less. And he's like, I didn't say no.
Yeah. That's such a good, like you feel bad and you're like, okay, I have to like wind it back a little.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I kind of do that all the time where I complain too hard about something and then I'm like, well, you know, I'll still do it. Like, yeah, you know, it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't say no is just like it's also the perfect like manipulative thing to do, because he's absolutely saying no in every single facet of this. He's finding every way to be like, can't do it. And then as soon as he gets yelled at, he's like, whoa, don't get hysterical, lady. Like,
yeah.
It's not like I said no to it. And yeah, and then she gets fully engulfed in flames. And the next scene we have with Valentina is, you know, Tony entering the burn victim unit fully covered in like plastic, you know, to avoid infection. While Valentina is like going full like David after dentist, just looking at him and being
like the silk robe industry had to be upset about that whole scene. I don't think they really catch on fire that fast. I would hope not.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever been fully covered in silk and near fire, but it feels like it's absolutely possible. It's like being covered in very thin paper. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know that it burns like that, but I liked it.
Yeah, no, it's fun to watch. and Tony's like attempt at being like thoughtful while she's in the hospital and it's very good. I have a clip of that.
Hey, how you doing?
Are you gonna operate on me?
No, it's me, Tony. They gotta fight infection.
My hair.
Well, the good news is it'll grow back. And the burn's a second degree, so you don't need a skin graft or that hyperbolic chamber. You're going to look the same as you always did.
Fuck you.
All right. Okay, sit tight. Rest. They got to keep you in here a couple of days so it don't get no bacteria in it.
Are you going to operate on me?
All right, look, I'm going to take care of everything. The doctor bills, wig, whatever. I got to go.
This was another scene that was sort of where my attention was hijacked by the fact that Tony's hands are just like giant fucking catcher's mitts with sausages on.
Huge meat paws. Yeah, I mean, like, I especially love him, you know, being like, don't worry, your hair's going to grow back. But in the meantime, I'm not totally heartless. I will buy you a wig.
Yeah.
Oh, did he say wig? I thought he said wake.
No. He said he was going to, I'll buy you a wig. And
making an even worse joke where he was like, I'll pay for the wake, like if you die.
No. he's not a total monster. Yeah, I mean, first of all, he would never pay for a funeral for her. I don't think that would happen.
No. Yeah. It would be like he like starts out like saying he's going to do it. And then it's like, he loses a bunch of money on gambling, and then he's like, doesn't she have family?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, the back out at the end. Yeah. Overpromise, underdeliver.
Yeah, I barely even knew this broad. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he would have someone else like research what like how to apply for like the city to like somehow pay for it.
Well, he would do what Hesh did with the racetrack and his dad's mistress, where he's like, I wasn't going to give all the money to that trollop?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and this kind of like takes care of something for Tony a little bit, but at the same time, he can only see it as another inconvenience. Like this poor woman has second degree burns all over her body and her hair is melted off. And he is like, his response is like, why me? Why does shit always happen to me?
Such a good line. Like, why does this shit always happen to me? You know, like my mistress catching herself on fire.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to cook me egg beaters. And then the next why me scene with Tony is, and this is, I think, my favorite.
I also like that Tony's idea of like what constitutes like marriage material is so food based. like all of his mistresses, he knows that they're only mistresses because like they don't cook. And then his idea is like, oh, why didn't I just marry Charmaine? Like this, like obviously she's a good wife. Like she's such a good cook.
Yeah. No, the scene in which Tony is like complaining to Tony B about like all of the shit that's gone wrong, you know, in the last couple of days, he starts mentioning, you know, how he should have like been with Charmaine, because number one, she's a good cook, and number two, because she's also a certified notary public. And that for him, he doesn't explain why that's important, but clearly there's
she's stacked, she can cook, Yeah. She can certify documents. Like,
yeah,
what else
she can
do you
notarize.
Need?
Like, yeah, she's got everything you'd want out of a woman. I'm still struggling to understand why her being a notary public is important to Tony.
Because in his mind, that makes her like an accomplished woman with like interest.
Right. He puts that like any woman with like a job.
Right.
He's like, that's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
he's so stupid that it's like, yeah.
Well,
because like so
he's
impressed by like, yeah, women working.
Well, he's also never really had like a real job. Like, he's never done anything as hard as taking a test to become a notary public.
Right.
So like, to him, like, she got some sort of she's got a certificate of some kind,
right,
which makes her you know, like a success in the straight world.
He also simultaneously hates the idea of Carmela ever becoming a working person. So he's like, he lives with this like thing where he's like, you know, he, on the one hand, he looks at women who have jobs and is like, you know, that's the perfect lady. She can cook. She makes her own money. She notarizes. And then he looks at Carmela and is like, you know, basically dragging his feet and doing everything he can to stop her from becoming a real estate agent. So, you know, he contains multitudes.
Well, because when it's not your wife, it's a thing to respect in a woman. But when they are your wife, it like diminishes you somehow, because you're like a failure,
right,
that your wife has had to go learn how to be a notary.
Yeah, I think it has to do if you're already working. The fact that like pre-Tony, you know, if he were to like date Charmaine or marry Charmaine, she's already working. And I think he would, any woman that he like married, if he married someone else besides Carm, he would force into retirement. Like,
yeah.
That would be part of what makes him the man in the relationship, is making them quit their job. You know, because he's a traditionalist at the end of the day.
Yeah, but it works with like a side piece, because it's like, well, that's like less time I have to spend worrying about her.
Right, exactly. But he still idolizes it as like a possible wife, though. That's why he like looks at Charmaine and he's just like, you know, it would work between me and her, just like, you know, in high school.
That whole thing is great, though, because like Charmaine hates him.
Yeah. More than anyone on the show.
There's like no possibility.
Yeah.
He's like, I should fuck Charmaine and marry her.
Yeah.
He just fucking hates him.
Yeah. The one person on the show who like really sees him for who he is and what a pain, even more so than like Melfi, more so than Janice, more
right,
so than anyone.
Yeah. That's probably why he's into her, though. Like,
oh, of course.
Beyond the titties, it's also like there's the Olivia component, where he's just like, yeah, this woman thinks I'm a piece of shit. I should marry her immediately and make her quit being a notary public. So in one of my absolute favorite scenes in The Sopranos, not just in this episode, but I think about this scene all the time. We have the scene with Mirza, the maid, throwing away the paper. Like that to me, I don't know why this just fucking kills me so much, but there's something about Marissa's response to finding out that she fucked up being, oh no. I have a clip of that as well.
Miss, are you seen today's paper?
Everything in the kitchen, Mr. Tony.
God fucking damn it. You know this is today's paper?
Oh, no. This is today's paper. That's I'm thinking.
Why'd you throw it away?
Oh, no. I beg you some enchiladas you like.
Thank you. That's nice.
I feel like her reaction is sort of the way it is to call any sort of customer service helpline now, where no one actually can fix any problem, but they have been trained to like be like, oh, I'm so sorry that you're feeling this way.
True. It's just like calling Chase Bank and then being like, I have all these charges on my car. No.
Like you call Comcast and you're like, hey, my internet doesn't work. Do you think you could fix that and get that working again? They're like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry that you feel this way. I too know what it is like to want internet but not have it. Like, they literally spend 2 minutes trying to fake commiserate with you, and you're like, no,
right,
like, all I want right now is for you to fix the problem and let me get off the phone, but it's always like,
right, yeah. And like, I'm just trying to cancel my service. Oh, no. I fucking love it. Oh man. But yeah, also I love you know, Tony's maid calling him Mr. Tony. There's just these little touches of like suburban dad life that are just, they fucking kill me. And then of course he gets the enchiladas and immediately gives them away to Tony B, who is very distracted. Like he's clearly dealing with the fact that like Angelo has been killed.
And also with hating his kids, like no character on this show hates his own children more than Tony B.
Yeah. Because it's clear like he really like he didn't grow up with them. They like smuggled his sperm out. Right. Isn't that the story?
Yeah, that's right.
They smuggled his sperm out of prison to make these two, you know, twin monsters. And they're just kids. They're totally fine. Right. But like,
well,
he had no
this daughter
connection.
Who was a straight A student until she like ran away to become a juggalo or whatever. And,
right. Exactly.
She's just gone somewhere.
Yeah. So, you know, he's left with these two kids.
I do like the shitty twins trope in fiction, like between this and like Rushmore. There's like Bill Murray's kids in Rushmore where they just... I like the idea of just two kids that are
two genetically terrible children.
Yeah, trying to ruin your life, like double teaming you.
Yeah. But yeah, so Tony B is freaking out because he's dealing with what happened with Angelo in a previous scene. So in terms of the Tony B storyline, we see him like meeting up with Angelo. Angelo like partially pays him for killing Joey Peeps. And then, you know, gives him a novelty plaque that says, because I'm the boss, that's why, which is, I mean, just the touch of like, hey, listen, sorry, the way they're doing it in New York right now is they're not paying their hitman, you know, full price, but, there's a, you know, there's a Spencer's Gifts right next to where right. we hang out.
And we don't have the money to pay you, but just know you are valued for your work.
Yeah, no,
yeah, I love all the Angelo scenes in this season. I like it when they're trying to, like, after Lorraine Caluso gets threatened.
Yeah.
When, like, Angelo's talking about his grandkid, and Tony's like, all right, okay, I, like, have to be somewhere. Yeah. Like, Tony's such a prick. Yeah. Like, this guy's been in prison for, like, 35 years.
Yeah.
And he's like, can you, like, get to the point?
Yeah, and I think that we're introduced, the first time we see Angelo is he's at the golf course with Carmine, and Carmine has a stroke, and then he's just like, get that egg salad out of his mouth! And I just like, it's just a great introduction into this character. And unfortunately, this is his last episode. We see him in his very last scene. He's leaving a Costco, and he's buying a John Deere Power Wheels, which is just a beautiful detail. It's like, I had to like look it up. I'm like, what is this fucking thing that he's getting?
It has such a weird name, Peg Perigo or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that? I looked it up. Familiar.
And it's just, it's a child size John Deere, you know, like Power Wheels, and which is incredibly cute.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's just, he's just trying to, you know, buy a gift for his grandkids.
Well, that's like his first scene, like when he's like, oh, I love playing with my grandson. You're like, this character's dying. Like this season. Like he is not making it to like episode 8.
No. Yeah. No, this kid, he's just too nice of a guy. You just kind of.
Yeah. Anyone who comes into the show or comes into the story, either talking about how much they enjoy their kids or making like a positive life change. Like, right. You know, they're not long. For, like Tony B, when he first came into the show, was like, oh, I'm studying for this test to become
I'm
gonna
be a massage
masseuse.
Therapist.
Everything's going to work out great for me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going straight and narrow, you know. Yeah. You just go, oh, all right. So how long before they're doomed? So Angelo dies. He gets killed and Tony B is freaking out. And Tony
they go after him with a Garrett, and they did a terrible job strangling him, and so they have.
They
to...
always do. I feel like that's like the one thing that like unites all of these like mafia like murder shows and movies is that it seems to be the hardest way to kill somebody. I imagine it's the cleanest to just, you know, fucking choke them out, but I don't understand why it's like. It's why is it the go-to thing? I get the ice pick. Ice pick makes the most sense. You know, right Tony, into the brain.
Tony did the best job with garroting someone in the show.
Yeah. You mean...
That was the college episode. Who did he kill that episode? I'm trying to remember.
He killed... I forgot that character's name, but he's like
the
rat. It
was a rat in hiding. Yeah. Murdered some guy also, in witness protection. Like,
I mean, you think the benefit of strangulation is not... There's no blood, but then when you add like the little cord to choke them with, like that's going to cut them and they're going to bleed everywhere.
Yeah, there's DNA, and not only that, but your hands obviously get fucked up. Like you have to wear gloves. It just seems like, I don't know, this is like an inefficient way to murder.
Yeah, it's like someone saw it in a movie once and no one like has ever learned how to do it right. But
right.
It's still...
I love the idea of like season 5 or 6 Tony trying to garrot someone.
Just completely fucking out of breath.
Yeah.
Just
can't get his fingers in the little rope.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I mean, you know, he fucking cuts up his hands when he does it in season 1. I can only imagine what's gonna fucking happen you know, if he tried it again. But anyways, Angelo is fucking dead, and then Tony is so mad about his newspaper, you know, being thrown away that he decides to go to the plaza for no reason.
I love that because it's like, I'm mad. What's the way I can spend $3,000?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And it just, looking, he's trying to have this, like, Eat, Pray, Love ass weekend at the Plaza Hotel. And I was just thinking of In the Heights when he's like looking out at the park being like, ah, don't bother me. I'm listening to my block kind of shit.
Let me just listen to the sounds of my block real quick.
Yeah.
And just
I'm gonna go to my favorite bodega and then go to the Plaza Hotel.
Yeah, right.
It's so stupid that he wants to do that. And it's like, it's great. It reminds me of like a Cometown thing about how like, mobsters are like, there's something very feminine and like elderly about them where it's like,
yeah,
I want everyone to see my jewelry and I want to be wearing something soft. Because it's like the only thing that makes them masculine is that they like fuck a lot of women and kill people. But right. It's like if you take that away, it's just silly.
Yeah, you're driving around like a giant couch and then you're like draped in velvet all the time and little pinky rings.
But with Tony, it's like you see the full extent of that because he's like, it's like after Chris dies, he's like, I need a getaway. Just me alone. And like with this, it's like he's stressed out. So he goes to the like, why would he even think to do that? It's so funny. Like, it's like it's such a sort of like it's like something that your like rich aunt would do.
Right. Yeah.
And he's the perfect mark for the plaza because he's just like watching the fucking hotel channel and, you know, seeing a hooker on the.
Yeah.
I'm going to call a hooker from the TV. And then he goes there thinking it's going to be like this relaxing weekend. And then the very first thing that happens is he's like fighting with the valet. And then he has to like sort of fight with the front desk. It's all a headache. He thinks it's going to be like this nice.
And then, like, he randomly sees Dr. Melfi, who has, like, one of the fucking weirdest throwaway lines. It's just, like, oh, Jill, that's so funny. And and he's just like, oh, boy, you know. And then, of course, he's going under a fake name. But, yeah, he gets to the hotel, and he turns on the TV, and he sees a commercial for an escort service, which, like, is that I don't think I've ever seen. I've seen commercials for, like porn, like call lines.
You just haven't stayed at nice enough hotels.
I think I haven't. Is that a thing? Are there in New York?
I don't know. Like, I feel like if it was a thing, it like, maybe it would have been, like, 30 years ago or more, where it's just, like... I don't know. Like, yeah. I don't want to categorically say no because, like, how would I know?
Right.
It doesn't seem like there would be, like, and I feel like they didn't need to do that. I feel like it's, like, if anyone, like, knows how to get a hooker in...
It's Tony.
...to the plaza, yeah, it's like, yeah, no.
But I think that's what's like, sort of sad and funny about it. Like, this guy who literally runs, a strip club as a front business... how does he find a hooker? Oh, he just sees it on like the television channel at the hotel.
Right. Yeah. He flips the TV and he goes like, call this number for, you know, all these like, you know,
for
Asian beauties
time.
Or whatever. Yeah. And, so I don't know. I was blown away that there would be like TV commercials for hookers, and I was like, maybe that's a thing in New York. I don't know, but
the Big Apple, the Plaza Hotel, they got the hookers on the TV.
Yeah, exactly. You got people. You got a bunch of micks riding horse carriages around town. Yeah, he's like living the most like trashy kind of I don't know, like. Touristy version of New York,
yeah,
which is
exactly
what I feel like a New Jersey dad would do.
Yeah, like his version of New York is like, oh, you know, my city, this is gonna be great, and then he goes and does like all the things that the cheesiest tourist would do.
Right. Yeah. He eats a Sbarro pizza and he fucking, you know, he buys tickets to Cats. Like, it just, everything he's doing feels so touristy, which is, I think it's why I enjoy Tony Soprano as a character, because he's
a great character because he is like a cut smarter than everyone around him, but he's still like a tacky person.
Right.
Yeah.
Like his taste like still sucks for the most part. And like he does have like, they always hinted him having this deeper knowledge than other people do. And he does. He does, like, that's sort of his gift and his curse. Like when he, do you remember the HUD scam episodes?
Yeah.
That storyline? Where it's like he connects with the Reverend because his like deep knowledge of like soul records and shit,
right?
And R&B, and then and doo-wop and shit, and then it's like, yeah, he knows things on a deeper level than like Paulie or even like Sylvia would, but he also like, he's still a product of this world, and he's still like a tacky boomer,
right?
Right,
and that's the funny thing, because it's like the whole. I mean, and I think The Sopranos exists as like not like a riff on, but sort of like an extra chapter of Goodfellas, and like the whole thing with Goodfellas was, you know, we're these criminals that we do all this shit, but it's only so we can live this high life that the regular schmuck could only dream of. You know, we go through the back at the Copa and
we know
all the cool shit. And then The Sopranos is kind of like puncturing that idea a little bit, where it's all these people that are still doing all the shit where they're like lying and being predatory and killing each other so they can maintain this lifestyle. But like this lifestyle is just like, what a uncreative, any uncreative upper middle class schmuck would live. Like his dreams are not very big. Like he's doing all this just to live, you know, in a fucking sandals brochure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's, you're watching kind of like, the power of the mafia at this point is like nowhere near what it was like in Goodfellas or whatnot. So now, you know, Angelo still has to fucking go to Costco to get deals. You know, everything can be bought off the back of a truck, right?
Like real rich people are doing cooler shit than he is. And whenever he comes into contact with people like Noah's parents and Finn, who are, you know, like wintering
like
in the Alps and
wealth.
Shit. And he's like, he can't even imagine that. Like to him, the Alps is like staying a night at the Plaza.
Right, exactly.
And he's like, I mean, that's the great thing, is the isolation of the show. He's not like that economically isolated from like the Cusimanos or people like that. Like he makes a similar amount, if not more, but, and he was like, he is kind of like generational, like PMC. Like his dad was like upper middle management in the mafia.
Right.
But because it's so isolative, he doesn't ever. Yeah. No, his idea of like a big night, we saw it when they go out with like Brian and Furio.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to do the same shit we always do, except there's going to be a helicopter.
Right. It's like, he's not limited by money. Like, in their minds, they're probably thinking they can, you know, live the true high life just by making extra money. But like, really, they're just limited by their own imagination of what the high life even is.
Right. No, I love the things in the show of like, what does Tony do when he splurges and shit like that? Like when they buy the beach, when they try to buy the beach house, so good, because it's like, it's like, first of all, he's like, this will be like the Kennedy compound, and it's a nice house, but like, no, it's not.
Yeah, not
like,
even
why
close.
Do you think that?
Yeah, like, there's neighbors and shit. Like,
yeah.
There's something about him kind of like thinking that the top of the food chain economically is being able to go spend a night at the Plaza Hotel and then watch a commercial and just be like, I can buy anything off the TV.
I mean,
like it's just like him seeing ads and buying them. because he can. That's what he thinks is that's the top level.
It's like the mafia dream of Las Vegas, where they're like, look, yeah. we can do anything we want. We can go build our own like personal paradise somewhere. And then what's that paradise? It's like, oh, it's like a big tacky building with like fucking Paris painted on the walls.
Yeah. No, yeah, I love that. I love that shit, like the cultural isolation of it, because it's, yeah, it's visible in real life too. And there were like individual mobsters who were like kind of like Tony had like a special insight on what high culture or not even or like had a special insight on the world and culture in general, like Carlo Gambino or like Frank Costello. But for the most part, it's like, okay, you have the equivalent of like you made the equivalent of like $100 million in like 1947. What do you buy? And it's like, get me the heaviest Cadillac, please.
Yeah, I will take your largest tail fins.
Yeah, I love scenes like that. I love scenes where it's like, yeah, Tony has to dabble with like the regular upper middle class or upper class, and it's just like, for how smart he is, it's just like they might as well be like a different species.
Right. Right. Well, there's that scene in the, you know, when they throw the surprise party for Carmella's dad their fancy friends are clowning on the gun that Tony has bought for Hugh. He's like, oh yeah, Beretta doesn't even export the real good shit.
You can't get the good guns anywhere. You have to go there to get the real guns.
And Tony's like, no, look, I got bullets. The sausage that he loves and everything. What are you talking about?
No, that scene's great because it's also like Ross is like as petty and small-minded as Tony.
Yeah.
He just has like a different cultural cache than Tony does.
Yeah. So
I also like the Easter egg that implies that he's Paulie's father. Russ. Who? Yeah. Russ. The ambassador. Yeah.
They imply that is. Oh, I missed that completely.
Yeah. Okay. When Tony's mom is dying, or when Paulie's mom is dying, she's like, there was this soldier. He was so nice. His name was Russ.
Oh,
and during the barbecue, they talk about Russ being a veteran.
Yeah.
And then later, Paulie goes, I don't even know who I am anymore. My dad's this Russ bastard. Wow. And it's like, they say it so many times. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, shit.
But at the same time, boomers, there was like seven names back then. So there was, you know.
It's true, but I don't feel like they would have done that by. I feel like that's like a funny little joke they have.
Yeah.
I like
his,
it.
Yeah. His son would be like.
The trashiest.
The worst Italian.
Yeah, ever. Yeah. Like, he's literally the most mortifying version of everything he hates.
Yeah, about. Murderous, greedy, tacky.
Yeah, tacky and stupid.
Yeah.
Oh,
annoying.
Fuck.
Like, just, the most annoying man in the mafia.
Right.
Yeah, the guy like, who goes to Italy and, like, demands they make him Sunday gravy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. Just saying signore to random strangers.
Hey, come in the door.
Yeah.
Just the worst thing that he hates. It's just he's his entire, all he does is create little Olive Garden dudes. I love the idea that he's just like made the worst version.
I love speaking of another thing about isolation. I like that. This is another thing. I was thinking about this last night, actually. How Tony's like, oh, I'm telling people in Italy to kill Furio. And it's like, you have no fucking pull over them.
Yeah, you have no power. Zero.
Like, that's the real mafia.
Yeah, right.
That's like, exactly. They make billions of dollars. Like, they dwarf your shit. Like, you can't get Furio killed over there. Like, right. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's just like I'm just saying, if anyone sees him, he's a dead man. It's and it's like you know three guys over there.
You called someone on the phone. It's like literally was like customer service. Like you called the headquarters of the company. And they're like, yeah, we'll definitely do that. We'll definitely kill our maid, like our best soldier.
I love the idea. He calls them up. He's like, this guy, he tried to fuck my wife. And they're like, oh, no.
Yeah. But that shit's so funny because it's like they're really like in it, like the scenes in Naples, like they're actually like menacing and have this like real street presence and they're like a real organized thing.
No, just
and
beating Tony's the like, shit yeah, out of children.
Tony's like, I can get one of those guys killed because I complain.
Yeah, exactly.
And then when he sees like how much control they have over like the entire neighborhood there, he's like actually scared by it.
Right.
Yeah, no, he's like, oh, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, that's too scary.
This is far too scary for me.
This is too scary.
yeah, yeah. But like all the things they do with like his specific isolation is amazing. That's why he's such a good character, because he's both sculpted, but then he's sort of a relief. You get an impression of who he is by what of the world they chisel away around him.
Right. Completely. And you know, in terms of just like him alone in isolation, like this episode has some really like choice stuff. It's not just him, you know, sitting and watching TV. He's also like eating room service, waiting for his hooker to come. At one point he goes outside like to put his like, you know, tray away, and he sees someone else's New York Times and he steals it. Like just doing like the petty shit that he does and trying to relax.
I mean, meanwhile, that's like the whole idea of hotels and luxury in general. It's like, no matter how nice it is, you're still just like in a like fancy room by yourself. It's not going to change your life or make you that happy in any way, no matter what.
It just costs a lot and feels fancy and the view's better. That's basically it. So he gets the call, finds out that Angelo is dead, and that's when he just starts stressing like crazy. He calls everyone to be like, have you seen, you know, Tony B? Have you seen my cousin? And no one has seen him. And then we have the hooker who comes over, and then we start the dream sequence, which we will talk about in a second. I got to piss real bad. I'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm going to grab some water then.
Podcast. So we get into the dream sequence, and the opening line to the dream sequence really, really gets me going every time. It's just, "You want me to suck your dick, baby?" And him waking up next to dead Carmine Lupertazzi.
I kind of wish there was more Carmine in the show, because I really like Tony Lip as an actor on the show.
Yeah,
he does such an amazing job.
Yeah, he's so good. And like that's the thing, every scene that we had, it's like you feel lucky to have as much Carmine as we did, because he's just so fucking funny. But yeah, they had to kill his ass off. And so like going into the dream sequence, I feel like it's like, you know, we could analyze the whole thing. I almost feel like it's what they want me to do. So I almost It sets me against the idea of actually analyzing it and just kind of like going into, you guys can tell me what you think shit means.
Do you think that they were trying to do, you know how there was like the rumor that Paul McCartney was dead because he was all in white and like barefoot on the Abbey Road cover? Like, were they trying to do that with Annette Bening, where they have her show up like all in white and she's in sort of this dream sequence with a bunch of dead people?
What are you saying? They wanted us to think Annette Bening is dead in the Sopranos universe?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, if they did, why? I don't understand it. I mean, you know, they're just like, just in this universe, Annette Bening is no longer alive. I don't understand. I think, Felix, you said something that is correct about this, which was like, he just saw an Annette Bening movie like a week ago.
Right. He probably watched like The Siege.
Right.
And he's like, he had some like stupid thought that was like, it would be so, what if I was married to her? She's rich. People respect her.
Yeah.
She still looks good. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I love that, like, even in his dream, he's like, "You're Annette Bening."
Yeah.
And she's like, "Shut the fuck up."
Yeah, right. he makes a fool out of himself in front of Annette Bening in his dream, which that is very relatable. There's a lot of, like, relatable aspects to this dream that I like a lot. Like, I like anything that The Sopranos does with, like, teeth falling out. Like, that's, like, a regular dream that I have. Like, teeth falling out. Yeah.
I like that because teeth falling out is an established, like, anxiety dream thing. Like,
right.
It's one of those weird universal things that we all experience. But, like, the way they did it with a dream where there's, like, a weird physical logic to dreams, where it's, like, when he goes to load his gun, and instead of bullets, he has teeth.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, yeah, in a dream, when you have, like, some, like, body horror, like, unwanted physical object, you, like, try to get rid of it, and you can't.
Right.
It's like in your pocket and you freak out.
And you always
like,
have
I thought that was so good.
Or the fight, like any fight dream where you like are in a fight and you're like helpless, like your arms are noodles and nothing. Nothing you do works kind of thing. Yeah.
And then also like the just general, like this is called the test dream because it's supposed to be like that dream that you have, you know, going back to high school and not being prepared for a test. I have that weird with like, that kind of dream with plays. It's very weird because I haven't done a play since I was in elementary school, but I'll have the dream where like, oh fuck, the play is happening tonight and I don't remember any of these lines. And it's kind of like there's a similar like anxiety going on here, except he has to murder someone and for some reason it's his coach or Tony B. So you know, you got Carmine talking about, oh, you know, they get a phone call and he's like, if it's the man upstairs, tell him I'm not here, which, okay. and then we get to like Tony in therapy and his therapist is now just Gloria Trillo who sometimes has the voice of Melfi. And I have a clip of that.
What'd you see of me anyways?
The object is to learn what you saw in me, not what I saw in you.
One of these days, Alice, one of these days.
Pow! Right in the kissa?
To the moon, Alice!
I remember when you hit me, it was like pow to the moon.
Don't get me steamed, Alice!
And then you choked the shit out of me!
Yeah, but that's after you were trying to put a fork in my eye.
No, that was your mother!
Sometimes what happens here is like taking a shit.
I prefer to think of it as more like childbirth.
You tell me.
I don't have any children. I died too young.
So there's something about that scene where I'm like, on the one hand, you know, I appreciate like Tony's subconscious has like guilt for kind of being responsible for what happened to Gloria. On the other hand, I'm like, this sequence feels poorly acted and I don't enjoy it at all. Just kind of like the, I died too young. And also the like, I don't know. It felt like watching a play.
I felt like that's purposeful. Like in a dream, when there's laughter, it feels like it's out of control momentum.
Sure.
And then when it stops, it's very halted.
Yeah.
Like those lines are like, okay, those actors are capable of like not delivering halted lines, and the writers are clearly capable of writing like sort of naturally flowing but rhythmic dialogue.
Sure.
Why didn't they choose to do that here? They did it because it's like, they're sort of replicating like the blocky feeling of talking in a dream, of communicating
right.
in a dream.
Yeah, the way it doesn't feel naturalistic. I also think it's like one of the rare times that you feel sorry for someone who's gotten killed in the Sopranos. Like you don't get a lot of those moments. Like people die and a lot of times it's kind of like a punchline or it's funny or it's just, and it becomes like a thing that they just joke about in the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And then, like, in that moment in the dream, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, I do feel sort of bad for Gloria.
Yeah. Because you're experiencing the dream through, like, Tony's mind. And I think Tony does have a thing when it comes to little kids and not being able to have kids or any of that stuff where he seems to actually display some, like, human emotions.
Yeah, that after he kills Matthew Bevilacqua and then he's in the mall and the kid's lost. And he's so, like, fucking weird about it that the mom's like, get away from me.
Right.
He's, like, because it's, like, the same thing with animals where it's, like, well, you have, like, that has to go somewhere, kind of.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And it's, like, but it's one of his feelings that's, like, totally ungoverned or uncompartmentalized. So he just comes off like a fucking psycho. Like,
right.
When they're, like, after... Like, I think it's after the episode University when, like, Meadow is, like, getting some shit in the kitchen. And he's like, you know, I fucking love you and I would do anything for you. And she's like, what are you – what? Like, it's so – he can't, like, have any, like, graduated release of emotion.
Right.
So it just, like, all comes out.
Yeah.
Like when he sees the painting of Hayomai and like everyone sees him cry. Like, it's so fucking embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, he clearly, yeah, he has to compartmentalize in order to like actually, I think like you said, like he needs to place those feelings somewhere. And so he kind of just, he places them into animals and like little babies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's how he allows himself to feel, which I kind of get. I mean, sometimes I'll watch like, I'll watch things specifically to cry. I'm like, oh man, this feels like a movie that's gonna make me cry, and I think I need a good cry. So I'll like, you know, put something on that does that for me. I think with him, it being tied up into animals and babies is like, that's his version of like, I need to feel human and do what humans do. So I'm just gonna program my brain to only care when animals are hurting. Like, yeah. Like in the scene where he in the fucking intervention scene where he's more mad that Chrissy killed Cosette the dog than he is about like any of the other shit that happened. Yeah. Like he just needs to care about animals, or needs to be seen to care about animals. I can't really tell, you know, it could be either one.
I think part of it's like in his mind he's like a protector, so when
right
like he kills other mob guys, he's doing that to protect like babies and dogs and stuff.
Yeah So then we get after the glorious scene, we get Tony, he's in dad's in his dad's car, he's got Pussy in there, he's got Mikey Palmisi in there, which is nice to see him back. Mm-hmm. And then Ralphie, and then Artie shows up. Then he's back in the Carm's house, and they're in their house, and you know they're on their way to visit Finn's parents. A movie's playing on TV. I think there's A Christmas Carol is definitely one of them. And then in that scene where he, you know, in that moment where she's like, "What are you talking about? This is your life." And then they look on TV and they see themselves getting dressed in the mirror. Was that an Eyes Wide Shut homage? Like, what was going on with that? That's what I saw it as.
I think they were doing an art there.
They were definitely doing an art. This whole thing is them doing an art, and fine, that's okay. And then we got Tony pulling a tooth out, and then we are at Vesuvio, and we're greeted by a busty Charmaine. And then we meet Finn's parents, Vin Mikasian, the dead detective, and Annette Bening as herself. And Vin sings Three Times a Lady. And the ending to that fucking song is fantastic. Where he's like, oh, after I sing, I need a good tinkle. And I really love that. I don't know what it's supposed to mean.
It just means nothing. It's just like a weird thing that someone would say that you like accept in a dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I also like the exaggerated sound effects in the dream. I feel like there's a thing in dreams where like sounds become menacing in weird ways. Like the guy with the pepper shaker, like it's really over. They make it overly loud in weird, random ways.
Yeah, yeah. All the sounds, the like sound editing they do for the dream sequences is kind of my favorite part of the dream sequences, because that is very similar to dreams that I have. Tony then goes to pee next to Vin, and you know Vin is like, "You haven't done it yet," and he says, "I did my homework," and he pulls out the Valachi papers, which is a book about, I guess it's a snitch who talked all about inside life in the mob. There are two like favorite parts of this dream sequence for me. The first one is Tony B shooting Phil Leotardo for a multitude of reasons. But one of them is because there are two, extras, or you would call them like, you know, non-essential characters who exist in the dream, who deliver some of my favorite lines in it. And I have a clip of that.
No! No!
I knew this was gonna happen.
Why didn't you stop him?
You have any idea what you just did?
Why don't you tell them what happened 20 years ago?
I can't go into that right now.
Yo, wasn't that Tony there, the guy you were supposed to cap to prevent this from happening?
I don't know. I guess not. I don't have a piece.
Annette Bening.
There's something Bugsy about him.
Yo, wasn't that Tony right there? I mean, that guy is one of my favorite guys in a dream sequence.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's Tony's brain being like, what if a black guy accused me of not doing my job right now?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why that scene's great, because, yeah, that's like dream logic. It's like, if I don't do this, everyone's going to be mad at me.
Right.
Everyone from like a black guy to Annette Bening. And like, yeah, Annette Bening will like compare me to like a character in a movie she was in.
Yeah. Just, it's the whole spectrum of guys who might be mad at him in his life.
Yeah.
Annette Bening and a random black guy who opens every line with, yo.
Like, yeah.
And also he uses a, like, isn't that the guy you were supposed to cap? There's this,
so stilted. It's like, yeah, very good. Yeah. And that's what I think. Yeah. Like, I think like the dream dialogue is like stilted on purpose.
Yeah. No, it is intentional. Yeah. It's definitely intentional. It's just so it's funny to know that you're inside of Tony's mind and these are the characters he's creating.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're getting deep into it, he then gets chased by the mob, which is, you know, you see there's a double meaning there, right? Like the mafia and a mob of people. Anyways, they do an art. He then runs off. Oh, he fucks Charmaine, which is a lot of fun.
Because Artie, like, tucks him. Artie's like, here, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like, come fuck Charmaine.
Yeah, yeah. He just is like, yeah, get into this car, and then leads him to Charmaine to fuck. And then, like, he's like, oh, she likes it when you pet her muzzle. Charmaine then turns into a horse. And then we just, like, for funs, you know, just for fun, it's like, Sopranos loves to add in some, like, dad puns.
Yeah, horse whores.
Yeah, and then it's like, you can't have your horse in here. And it's like, ah, that's fun. All right.
Yeah.
You know, like, to me, the whole, like, the horse stuff is also, like, they spent a lot of time doing this, like, callback to that song, My Rifle, My Pony, and Me. Like, this, like Tony sees himself as, like, just a fucking, you know, a guy on the range in the West with his horse and his gun. You know, it's just, that's who he sees himself as, I guess. And then also like a general. And then finally, the very last part of the sequence, and this is my absolute favorite, is Coach Molinaro, who knows he's there to whack him, and Tony's. So, can you were saying that his bullets turn into teeth? Is that what
Yeah. Like, he tries to load a mag into his pistol, and there are just teeth in his hand.
Yeah. And they all fall out. And he's trying to, like, put them in, but they're all, like, they're dissolving into something.
Yeah.
What I looked at that, and I was like,
I saw, like, blood.
You saw blood?
Like, just generic, like, body horror, blood and shit.
I saw doo-doo. I thought it was doo-doo. I don't know why. It just felt like that to me.
I saw bugs, like, for some reason.
Maybe we have three different color saturation settings on our TVs.
That could be. Or maybe this is like a fucking Rorschach test, and we fucking all just... That was what we saw, man. That's our interpretation. But I just love the guy playing Coach Molinaro. He's so fucking funny.
That guy's awesome.
Yeah,
he's so good. I have a clip.
What's that you got there? A bigger dingus than the one God gave you? Dumbass. Why?
Because I'm not some kid anymore.
What did I tell you? Cleave yourself away from them bums you hang with, I said.
Well, I'm in therapy now.
That's a damn shame. You all listen to that pissmeyer, Arthur Bucco. He was the worst of the bunch. I told you that.
Honey owns a restaurant. He's doing great.
Bucco?
Yeah.
So what? The exception that proves the rule.
Oh, you know everything, don't you?
I suppose you blame it on your father when you're crying to that shrink of yours.
No, I'm on my mother.
Of course, even better. You know, I'll bet you got that psychologist wrapped around your finger.
Well, that's what you always told me I was good at, right?
I also told you, most likely, you'd take the easy way out.
It hasn't been easy.
I told you many times, Anthony, you were special. You had smarts, personality, leadership potential, all the perquisites to lead young men onto the field of sport. And now look at the stress you live with. You're not prepared! You'll never shut me up.
I like the characterization of the coach where he just like randomly overpronounces or like uses a bigger word than you'd expect at random times. I feel like that's a very coach thing to do.
Yeah.
Cleave yourself away from these pissmeyers.
Pissmeyers, that's a first for me. I'd not heard what a pissmeyer is. Yeah. I do love that he thinks Artie Bucco is the worst of them. Like that shit makes me excited for Many Saints of New York.
I can't wait.
I'm trying to like temper my expectation, but I kind of feel like no matter what they do with it, I'm just going to be stoked that it exists.
Dude, I just like lore.
Yeah.
Like even in the worst possible universe where it's like bad, it's like, well, I'll be like, well, I have more lore now, so I really don't care.
Exactly.
I started playing Dark Souls during quarantine because it was like more lore, baby.
Awesome. Yeah, I like that they're kind of, I don't know, I get the feeling that they're going to try to like Marvel fucking MCU this thing a little bit and just be like, you know, the same way they do with Star Wars, like, what was it, Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Like, they're going to do
a... I would love that.
Yeah, I'd be so down. I'd finally
I would write one of those series for like nothing. If you're listening now, I believe we should break the WGA. We need Pinkertons. Shows aren't good anymore. Let's break that union.
Exactly.
I will write this non-union rate. I don't care how much you pay me. Yeah. I don't give a shit. I will write a show about like Richie Aprile in the 60s.
Yes.
I don't care.
I'm just excited to finally write Pravati in India, which is my Emily in Paris. It's just I just want to see fucking what it was like for Janice, you know, being a hippie on the run. I mean, I'm excited for a bunch of Sopranos extended universe shit. I hope Coach Molinaro makes an appearance.
I like Curb Your Enthusiasm type show about like Beansy in Florida.
Yeah,
there's so much you could do. Like, there's the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, it really. I mean, and just going deep with it, like Elliot Kupferberg's daughter.
Yeah.
I want to see her at a nonprofit as an office comedy. Like, that's just fucking make it. You know,
Melfi's son as like a sort of like elder millennial, like shitty journalist.
Be
one of those Daily Beast guys who's like been working there for 10 years and all his articles are like, here's what's happened on Bill Maher last night.
Right.
Like the most obnoxious graduate of Bard.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for that. So Coach Molinaro ends the dream. Tony wakes up. After that, he learns that, he was stressing out for a reason. Tony B actually shot Billy Leotardo, Phil's brother, and just kind of winged Phil. And then Chrissy tells him and then asks him if he's finished with his Toblerone, and he takes it, which is just another wonderful Sopranos touch where whenever there's like food left over that you can wet your beak on, like people just love to steal food or like just take other people's food. There's just something communal family style dining that they all do. And then it ends with Tony talking to Carmella about, his dream that he had, which is kind of a beautiful scene, especially after the season, all the ups and downs with their relationship. It's kind of nice to see.
Oh, I love that scene. I love that scene because it's like at the end of the day, this is the only person that's like gonna fully accept him for like how awful he is.
Yeah.
And he's the only person who will accept her for how awful she is.
Yeah.
And like there is something like nice about it, kind of, because it's like we saw Carmella try to date like a normal person.
Right.
And it ended her with her being like, I'll fucking kill you, you little fucking pussy.
Yeah, exactly. And him just being like, you threatened me with your pussy. It was just like, you know, you get to see them as kind of being stuck together, but in the most like romantic kind of way, where like you know, Tony's been trying to replace her with Tony B a little bit, and like having Tony B be the person that he talks to about all this stuff, and Tony B's just like, I'm trying to clean up after my kids, man.
Yeah, he's too annoying for anyone else. And it's like,
right.
She's like, do you remember that scene in like when they're going to Inori in season mm-hmm. 6 where he like, he looks like the worst he's ever fucking looked.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He
yeah.
looks terrible. Yeah. And he's like, just squeezes into this suit and she's like, my handsome man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that little scene is so funny to me, but also so like illustrative, because it's like, yeah, they're the only two people that can stand each other at this point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, it's beautiful to see that she can know exactly what dream he's talking about, and he can describe the dream, and they end on that. And yeah, and that's the episode. Real quick, let's do a favorite, least favorite. Vince, do you have a favorite scene?
I mean, super easy for me. Just Tony saying, how the fuck does this shit always happen to me after his girlfriend catches on fire? That's,
pretty lovely. Love that stuff. What about you, Felix? Do you have a favorite or most notable thing, something we missed?
Tony in the kitchen with Carmela watching the little kitchen TV. That's my favorite scene in the episode. Now that one I feel like is the most subtly weighty, mm-hmm. and like it feels so, like the way it's directed is so weird,
mm-hmm.
and gives you this like disembodied like funhouse feeling, and also like very significant dialogue that you can either accept or gloss over or go deeper into.
Yeah.
That I loved.
Yeah. No, that's good stuff. I maintain my absolute favorite thing is the maid Mirza making fucking enchiladas. It is a beautiful scene, and this is a hard one to be like, oh, this is what's my least favorite, because you know, it's hard to even rank dream sequences in that level because they're so detached from any non-dream sequence episode. But I will say, commercials for prostitutes on TV, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. And if that does exist, someone let me know. I think I'd give this a B+. What do you think, Vince?
Yeah, solid B+ for sure.
Solid B+. And Felix, if you had to rate this episode, how exactly would you rate this episode?
I had lowest, I would go is A-. This isn't like, I don't think this is like, I don't even think this is like a top 3 episode, but it's like my personal favorite.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because it's
that's
like,
right.
like, I think there are like, I could name off the top of my head like tons of episodes that are better than this.
Sure.
Like White Caps is like probably the best episode they've ever done.
Yeah.
Most things in season 6B are better. Most of the episodes in season 5 are like kind of better, but I just personally love this one because of how well they get the feeling of dreams and how many like just eerie disembodied feeling throughout all of it. So just weighting my personal feelings about it, I would give it at least an A-.
All right. Well, so if I gave it a B+ and Vince gave it a B+, you give it an A-, it averages out, I would say, this episode. Solid B+. That's where, if we're doing averages, that's what we're doing. And
it'd be like an 87 or something.
87?
Something good, yeah.
Yeah, that is a grade you can take home to your parents and have them love you. And this is a solid A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Felix Biederman, thank you so much again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for accepting my demand of doing the test stream. I'm not kidding. I literally was like, can we do the test stream, please?
Yeah,
like,
you
fine.
Did.
Fine. Well, they were like, what a weird request, but okay.
No, when someone's, you know, you follow people's passion, and you wanted to do this one, and I was like, look, if he feels that passionately about it, let's do it.
Especially since it's like the one episode where, like, I think if we had just gotten anyone else to, like, it just landed on somebody, they would have been like, everyone would have just shit on it the whole time. And I liked your perspective of why this is actually the best episode of The Sopranos.
It's not for everyone. It's for people that like lore.
Yeah.
I love lore.
Yeah.
You got to love lore to enjoy the test stream. Where can people find you on the internet?
At BioLogic on Twitter and Instagram, and at up-and-coming podcast Chapo Trap House.
Yeah, check out Chapo Trap House wherever you get your podcasts. Patreon.com/Frotcast for all of the bonus episodes of our main podcast, the Film Drunk Frotcast, in which we talk about movies instead of The Sopranos. The $8 tier, of course, gets you a shout out, which we will do now. All right, here are your $8 patrons for this week. We got Mark Silverstein.
Hey, Mark Silverstein. What are you, like Shel Silverstein? We call this guy the Giving Tree.
All right, I love it. I love it.
That's next his book, we right? got. I don't know. I'm not looking it up.
I think that works. Next, we got Gordon Davis.
What is it, Gordon? What is this, another Canadian we got over here? We call this guy Skates because he probably plays hockey.
Yeah, yeah.
All guys like named it. Gordon play hockey. That's what I know.
Totally, dude. all right. Next, we have a patron named Reverend Boat.
Reverend Boat. That doesn't sound like a real name.
I think you don't have to put your real name on Patreon. So some of these people already have a nickname. But I say mm-hmm. give a nickname to the nickname. That's what I say.
Yeah, Reverend. We're going to call this guy Father Phil because we don't have any, you know, we don't have any reverends around here. We only have... Monsignors and
all right,
Padres,
fair.
You know,
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next, we have Jake.
We call him
Fires.
Father Phil because he probably comes in his pants.
All right, you already had it. Yeah. Just keep piling on nicknames. All right, Jake Fires.
Fires. You know, where there's fires, there's smoke. We call this guy Smokey.
Oh, that's actually perfect. Two more: Mackenzie Parvin.
Parvin. I think my dog had Parvo once. We call this guy Fido because he's got a dog disease for the last name.
I love it. All right, and finally we have Dylan Young.
Dylan, oh, that's an easy one. We call this guy Dilly Pickles.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are your $8 patrons for this week. Pod yourself a shout out. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.